Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel. Thanks so much for the download. Also want to remind you that it's book season at Baseball America. It's not Wabbit season. It's not Duck season. It's book season. And the 2012 Baseball America reference books will be available soon. Go ahead and get your copies now and get your orders in now.
You'll be the first to get them when they come out.
Especially for the Baseball America Almanac, which will be first. Really the last book of its kind. Of course, the Prospect Handbook, which just got complimented by someone of the town of Cary, who's helping me find my son's basketball schedule. The Baseball America Directory, our Draft Almanac, which never goes out of season, and the Super Register. So go to baseballamerica.com/store for the Baseball America title that interests you the most. And,
or all four.
Or all four, or, of course, any other Baseball America gear. JJ, good time of year to subscribe because it's prospect season as well as book season. And we're all making phone calls, sending emails, pouring through databases that we already have, looking at the stats, and ranking prospects. But we did that really one of the things that we know, when you know it's the end of the season when we're doing our Minor League Player of the Year award meetings, and I think we started off our process thinking somebody was going to be our Minor League Player of the Year, but we finished with a different Minor League Player of the Year in Mike Trout. And I think when we started the process, we thought we were going to pick a pitcher.
I think we thought we were going to pick Matt Moore.
I think we all thought Matt Moore was our Huckleberry, and then the more we looked at it, the more we found that we wound up picking Mike Trout in a pretty close in-house vote.
And let's make it clear. And let's also, as far as vote, we do vote, but this is not a...
We're not a republic.
This is not a, okay, rank your top five, and we'll give them an ascending order of 10 points, 7 points, 5 points, 3 points, anything like that. It is, we sit down as a staff, we discuss it, we argue it, and then we say, okay, so who do we think? And then we basically come back around and say, are we all happy with that decision?
Pretty much.
And this year, I think the best way to put it is we all, as a group, there were two guys who I don't think anyone would have walked out of that conference room disgusted.
Correct.
If either of two guys got it.
I think if we'd picked Matt Moore, everybody in the staff would have been happy. If we'd picked Mike Trout, everybody in the staff would have been happy. And we ended up picking Mike Trout. And I think the biggest reason that we wound up picking Mike Trout was once we realized just how unique his season was in minor league annals in the last 20, 25 years, JJ, it made it stand out a little bit more.
Right. Because I understand. I know we saw some people, you know, we've gotten plenty of comments today. We announced it, and we got plenty of comments. And some, I think, you know, if you're arguing someone other than Matt Moore, I have a little more trouble with it from the standpoint.
Paul Goldschmidt
had a great year.
He did.
But at the same time, Paul Goldschmidt's year, while very good, was one of the best years offensively. Paul Goldschmidt's year and Anthony Rizzo's year, it's hard to say that Goldschmidt had a significantly better year than Anthony Rizzo.
His year, honestly, it's not even a slam dunk that his year was better than your boy Neftali Soto.
It was
Neftali Soto. Well, but not when you put into context that Neftali Soto is a year and a half younger than Paul Goldschmidt.
Right.
He's 22. Goldschmidt's 23 for the year. Will turn 24 here in a couple days. And in the same league, same number of home runs, and only slightly fewer at-bats for Goldschmidt.
Goldschmidt, better average, better on base.
It was.
But,
it was slightly better. But in terms of the impact, the reason that you're giving Paul Goldschmidt, if you were going to make him your minor league player of the year, which I understand USA Today did, correct?
Right.
If you're giving him your minor league player of the year, it's not because he of his batting and on base, which were impressive, but it's because of his slugging and his home runs. Soto's numbers are pretty comparable, and he's a full year and a half younger. I'm just saying that's just in the same league,
but
with worse travel, you know, for what it's worth.
The big thing
degree of difficulty where I'm headed.
The big thing that jumps out with Trout, and Matt Moore had better counting stats from the standpoint of, if you look at it, okay, around minor league baseball, Matt Moore finished second in the minors in strikeouts.
I would say that Matt Moore was slightly more dominant.
Right, but really what this came down to is you do have to throw the context into it, which is, and that's where Mike Trout's season stands out, is the context of he was a 19-year-old for the majority of the season.
Correct.
He did turn 20.
Through August, yeah.
But through August, he was
August
7th, I think.
Okay.
Through August 7th, I think it was, he was a 19-year-old. And as a 19-year-old, yes, 11 home runs, very difficult home run park. Got to remember one thing with that is it's very difficult park to hit home runs in. Mark Trumbo He's going to have 10 more, at least 10 more home runs in the big leagues this year, it looks like, than he had
the year he played at Little Rock.
The year he played with the Travelers.
How about that? I didn't know that. But so, yeah, like you said, let's get back to Moore's candidacy real quick, because I think it's a pretty strong year to not win Minor League Player of the Year.
And
we're biased, as the sign over Aaron Fitz signs, former cubicle here says. We're a little biased because we get to see him. He's right here in Durham. And in fact, as we're recording this, he starts in 2 hours in a AAA playoff game. So we got to see Matt Moore up close and personal. And Matt Eddy went to go see him and Julio Teheran on back-to-back nights and came away just being like, hashtag not a scout, but Matt Moore's better, you know? And the scouting reports sound better for Matt Moore. He has better breaking ball, better changeup, I would say.
And the main thing being, he throws lefty and Teheran throws righty. That's a big difference.
It's a major difference. The other major difference is that Matt Moore's 2 years older than Julio Teheran. Honestly, JJ, we ran into this last year, and it's crazy that we ran into it again. It's the same problem, and it's only a problem for us picking an award. That really doesn't have a ton of meaning. It means something to us, obviously, and it does mean something, I think, to our listeners and readers because they have commented on it. But the Rays system is so unique, and they're so good at the big league level in terms of their pitching, and they're so disciplined in the way they handle their minor league pitchers. It affected last year's Minor League Player of the Year award for 90% of big league organizations last year. Jeremy Hellickson would not have spent through the first part of August in AAA. He would have been in the major leagues. Same thing with Matt Moore. He would not have spent as much time in AA as he did this year and his time in AAA. He would be in the major leagues. I was thinking about the other day, I'm trying to think of the major league teams where Matt Moore would not be in the rotation right now. The Phillies, right?
Yep.
But he'd be up with the Braves with all their injuries.
Right, with all the injuries. Before that, no. But if you're saying Mike Minor, Julio Teheran, and Randall Delgado have all made starts, yes,
right.
Matt Moore would have been in the big leagues
right.
this year.
I mean, besides the Phillies, who else? Maybe the Giants? He wouldn't be in their rotation either. But honestly, with the Giants, Dick Tidwell would have taken him in A ball and put him in the big leagues.
Right.
I mean, how many National League organizations would not have Matt Moore in their major league rotation? One or two.
But let's put it this way. In the American League, the Yankees and the Red Sox are two of the teams that are going to be in the playoffs. Matt Moore would likely be a definite playoff starter for either of those two.
For either of those teams right now, I agree with you. There are just a very small handful of major league teams that would have the discipline and that don't have the need where he wouldn't be in their big league rotation by now. And that doesn't count against him. But you just have to, again, degree of difficulty is the phrase I use. He's a 2007 high school draftee, and 2007 was Mike Trout. He was barely in high school. He was 15. He was 15 going on 16 that year. He was a 17-year-old draftee in 2009. So a 19-year-old season in AA, comparing it to a 22/23-year-old season in AA/AAA,
advantage
goes to the 19-year-old. And while Moore was more dominant statistically, because he was in the top three in ERA, was he not? He was in the top three in batting average against if he didn't lead. He was second in strikeouts. You know, when we started the process, I was just like, slam dunk, Matt Moore.
Oh, and I was pretty much in the – and then what happened is – and you said it in your column. Then Matt Eddy was trying to dig a little deeper, and so he asked one of our IT guys to basically, Tim Collins, to say, spit out every year AA and above by a guy who was 19 at some point during that season, you know, hadn't played basically at 300, I think it's 300 plate appearances or more,
right?
AA and above. Just spit out the stats for it. And not going back, we didn't go back to like 1900 or anything.
Yeah, I think it was the last 20 years.
But like Gary Sheffield's on there from his 1988 season.
Must be the last 30 years.
So
might have been the Baseball America era.
Pretty much the Baseball America era. And Gary Sheffield's one of maybe two guys that you can point to and say, okay, maybe that season was better.
Justin Upton season to me in 2007 was the best comp. He started the year in the Cal League as a 19-year-old, played about 33 games there. And then went to the Southern League, played 70-some games.
And then
there,
went up. And
then finished the year in September in the big leagues. And his year for that 70-some game slice was very close to what Mike Trout did. And, it's Southern League versus Texas League. They're both teenagers, both right-handed hitting high school draft picks in their second full pro season. extremely comparable, I think, players, especially the physicality is similar.
The difference
Justin
being
Upton was a $6 million guy to high school, the number one overall pick in the draft, and his stats get a Cal League boost.
And
Trout's didn't, and Trout was the 25th pick in
Trout
the draft.
Trout has a better walk.
Better walk strikeout ratio, and he has more speed.
Significantly more speed. And that's not against Justin Upton, but, I mean, we're talking.
Mike Trout might be the fastest player in baseball. He might be the fastest player in the major league.
He may
right
not
now.
Be the fastest player on his team, or he may be the fastest
player
in baseball.
That's right. I think he's in the top five, and one of the other candidates is right next to him in Peter Bourgeaux. Undeniably the fastest half-Greek, half-Polish person in the United States. Well, I don't know if that's undeniable, but very excited about Peter Bourgeaux. Yeah, it does sound good. But Mike Trout doesn't have, I don't think, Justin Upton's power.
No.
But the difference.
If you talk to area scout Greg Morehart, he may say he does.
But that's what I was hinting at, JJ. Is that, you know, Justin Upton went first overall in the draft. Mike Trout went 25th overall in the 2009 draft, and that was part of the focus of your story was the Angels scouting of Mike Trout. It's a pretty unique story, and I think you didn't write too much about this part, so let's explore this part because you and I talked about it. I don't think we got a great answer, JJ, of why in the 2009 draft it went Strasburg, Ackley, high school right-handed hitting outfielder, but not Mike Trout, Donovan Tate, who's starting to go down in Padres history as just another example of how the Padres
Bush is calling him up and going, hey, Donovan, welcome to the club. He's not there yet.
That's it.
But he's
Jake Gautreaux knows that secret handshake. Matt Bush knows the secret handshake. Mike Ivey invented the secret handshake back in the 70s. There's a lot of guys in that Padres first-round pick curse club. I mean, I'm sure Steve Martin and Tom Hanks are back there, too. I'm sorry, that's the five-time club.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a lot of guys in that club. Alan Dykstra, Nick Schmidt, you know, there's company there. But why was Mike Trout – it doesn't sound like Mike Trout
well, –
he was higher on our board than 25, but he wasn't that much higher. He was like 22. We had Donovan Tate 3. I was a big reason for that. I was doing the Southeast. Did you find anything in your research for this story that had – what was the difference between those two guys in 2009?
Couple of things. And there's a quote in the story where Eddie Ben says, you know, look, we had them two on our board, which they did. I mean, they can – there's a lot
that?
Of – Eddie Bain, who was the scouting director for the Angels at the time, says we had Trout 2 on our board. There's a lot of teams now who like to say that, oh, we were on Trout 2.
Right.
The Angels clearly were on Trout. Like, there's no doubt about that. They also drafted him, so they get that.
Right.
We give them the benefit of the doubt on that.
Their story is the most believable because they took him.
Yes. But – he said, I don't see how you could see 22 spots of difference, because that was the difference between where Tate went and Trout went. But in talking to scouts and all, there's a couple things that come out. One is, he was a New Jersey high school.
Right.
And that is a terrible.
Yeah,
record.
Go into that New Jersey track record a little bit, because that's some bum, 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 names.
The track record is guys like of first-round picks from New Jersey of position players is Eric Duncan. Corey Smith, and Billy Rao.
Yeah, not good.
And those, if you are ranking your draft busts of the decade, those are at least involved in the discussion. Because
honestly, New Jersey, I'm not trying to harsh on New Jersey. I'm just thinking like the Frazier brothers. There are three Fraziers, and Charles topped out in AA. Jeff got to the big leagues for a cup of coffee. Todd's there now, and I think he is the best of the three Fraziers, and I like Todd Frazier.
Now, I'll say this, though. I think, though, when you say New Jersey College, there's a little bit of difference, though, also in that from the standpoint of, like, the Frazier, because you do have longer
– you have longer evaluation.
You have a lot – there's a much longer evaluation there. You're looking at
– even the Rutgers guys have been somewhat disappointing.
Right.
Bobby Brownlee and Val Majewski jumped to mind.
But the thing that especially jumps out with the high school guys is I had at least one scout say to me, he said, I think that Bill Rao really hurt him because he wasn't that many years before.
Yeah.
And coming out of that draft that year, the debate was whether Travis Snyder or Billy Rao was the best high school hitter in that draft.
Yeah, I'm trying. Wow. Travis Snyder. Wow.
You know,
he's been better. He's won that debate.
He won that debate. It's not a great debate, but it is.
But also, yeah, I'm even thinking, you know, I actually think of New Jersey high school guys. I'm thinking Jack Cust right now.
Jack Cust is almost like the success story.
He is almost a success story. My son, My son loved the fact that we have a Jack Cust Academy ad in Baseball America magazine these days, and because that's a name that he knows.
Because he's a strap.
Yeah, I didn't want to get too far into it, but yes, that is why he knows Jack Cust.
But
that's a pretty – that's a daunting track record that an area scout and cross-checker – cross-checkers are going to ask area scouts that question.
So what you have is you have – on one side, you have the Georgia semi-polished or considered at least more polished Georgia outfielder, and on the other, you have a New Jersey outfielder. So that's going to work against Trout. On the other, you have – even though, if you look at it in hindsight, it's really hard to argue that Tate was a better athlete than Trout. But at the time, I think that the consensus was that he was, because for one thing, you had the idea of Trout's pedigree wasn't the same pedigree. Donovan Tate was the son of an NFL football, running back.
Right,
so
yeah, Lars Tate.
There was that thought that, well, this guy has a better athleticism too, which,
and he had a two-sport commitment. He was a football, baseball recruit to North Carolina.
Right, and he was also considered to have more physicality, which, again, the
kind
thing
of
about
laughable
it
right,
is, like, in hindsight, right. None of those, and again, the Angels did not believe that. And there were, there was, the funny thing is that the questions about Trout at the time, the legitimate questions were, how well is he going to hit? Like, the other tools were somewhat present tools. He already could run. He was giving you 4-1s to first.
Right.
You couldn't really argue, oh, this guy can't run.
Yeah, our prospects plus, Matt Blood saw him at the area code games in summer of 2008, and that write-up is pretty positive, but it says, hit tool's a question. But that was also the question for Donovan Tate, which is
the crazy
thing.
But I was going to say, the other thing is that was the Donovan Tate question too. And so no one ever said that Tate was a polished hitter.
Right.
It was
right.
Great athlete, great athleticism, power potential, could, if he develops the hit tool, he could be something special.
And again, reporting on it that year, doing our draft coverage, I remember the comparisons for Donovan Tate were, if you liked him, that he was a Dexter Fowler type of athlete, potential Dexter Fowler type center fielder with more offensive impact. And like Dexter Fowler, there were significant questions about the hit tool. Dexter Fowler, I remember when he was coming out of high school, a scout telling me he's a two-year rookie ball guy. He's got a lot of kinks to work on the swing. Now, very rarely do players actually play 2 years in rookie ball. That just doesn't happen very often anymore. But that's a scout code for we really question the hit tool. And that was said about Donovan Tate, but people did believe more in him. And the thing is, if you look at it in that context, Dexter Fowler in 2008 had a big breakthrough minor league season, played for the U.S. Olympic team in 2009, I believe, was his rookie year in the majors. So that was a positive connotation.
Mm-hmm.
If you're saying better version of Dexter Fowler, and I think scouts sometimes like the fact that he didn't switch hit because that meant only one BP. You're not having to maintain two swings. And again, the physicality was stronger than Dexter Fowler.
Right. But
everyone wasn't on board with Tate, but enough people were that we put him third.
And the hindsight is that you look at Trout, and you could, if you said you had the same questions with them, but his frame was arguably better than Tate's in hindsight.
Right. Right.
He's just
thicker, more present strength.
More present strength. As the Angels area scout Greg Morehart put it, he said, Greg Morehart, the area scout who, if you read the story, loved Mike Trout, believed
right.
in Mike Trout more than anyone.
Yeah.
More than anyone else. I think the Trout family may have been second on the belief in Mike Trout behind Greg Morehart. But Morehart had been around for he was a supplemental first-round pick himself back
right.
in 1984, and he said, I've never seen a player at 17 with the tools that Mike Trout had, the physicality, the size-speed combo, all of that.
That was the word that you come back to again is one of my favorite scouting words, conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Morehart is the poster child for conviction. He had strong conviction about Mike Trout and didn't even need to see him perform. That was my favorite part of the story, JJ, is that he didn't even need to see him perform. Performing against high school players, against high school pitching, was immaterial to him.
Not only immaterial, to be honest, he almost kind of that senior year, they were picking 24-25. He didn't want to see him.
Right. That's right.
Dominate.
That's right. Yeah, he wanted him to struggle. He would, so he'd be there at 24, 25.
Right. And that's actually, there is some argument that that's somewhat what happened. The funny thing is you can't find an Angel scout who came in, a cross checker, scouting director.
Who saw him good.
Who saw him great. Like, yeah. You saw some who, they'd see snippets, they'd see flashes. You'd see a homer. This guy would see a homer. This guy would see him run fast. But you didn't have... As we had on our Baseball America on the XM show, the Baseball America show on XM this weekend, We were talking to Nick Castellanos, right. And he made the point. He said, "You know, if you don't hit 500 in high school, I mean, then are you trying?
That's
Well, that's kind of especially if you're not if you're in New Jersey.
We call the Scott Hurd line. Jim Callis and I do. If you don't hit at least that was one of the things with the signing deadline. I know I'm on a tangent now, but like Scott Hurd. I think we had number one on our board in 2000.
Yes, we did.
Ahead
of Josh Beckett, if I remember right.
No, Beckett was 99. He was ahead of Adrian Gonzalez.
Adrian Gonzalez, that's what it was.
In the same town, by the way. They're both San Diegans. San Diegoans?
Yeah.
San Diegans. Anyway, Scott Hurd changed a lot of things for Baseball America.
Yeah.
Before 2000 and 2000 and before, our draft list was where we thought you were going to get picked. Since then, it's where do we rank your talent? We put Scott Hurd one because we thought the Marlins were taking him one. But also, he hit under 300 as a high school senior and never again. Let me just tell you. And when the Red Sox had Senquez Golson up there in the negotiations on August 16th, and I was just doing some Senquez Golson research and realized he hit 314 his high school senior year. Now, I know he's a special athlete.
But
which
you
Scott
have to
Hurd
have
is not.
You have to have significant questions about the hit tool.
You're dangerously close to the Scott Hurd line when you're hitting 314. So for me, the Scott Hurd line really mentally for me is like 350. If you don't hit better than 350 in high school, it's a sliding scale of where you like
and
where you play.
Well, so, yeah, I was going to say, and this is the thing in Mike Trout's case, New Jersey pitchers. He was expected to do more.
Right.
Because he was facing a whole lot of slop.
The Nick Castellanos rule would almost apply for Mike Trout.
Right. Nick Castellanos said, you know, said, if you're not hitting 500, I mean, then, you know, I mean, are you showing up? Are you closing your eyes and swinging real hard? I mean, so with Trout, though, he had a very good senior year, but there were a lot of games where he didn't dominate like there was some expectation he would dominate. And the funny thing is, though, is that in his case, every level as he's gone up, it's almost been like the more challenge he faces, the better he gets.
Yeah, yeah. And he's so that was a big part of the story. The other part, like we hinted at, that you wrote about a lot was Greg Morehart. Just that process of a scout falling in love head over heels with a player, basically. Just having that man crush is not strong enough of a term, I don't think.
And
for the way that Greg Morehart felt and how he really went to bat for this player.
And the key thing with that, though, is that that's a key part of the story, and that's a key part of why the Angels have Mike Trout.
Right.
Everyone with the Angels says, about Greg Morehart, we don't have Mike Trout.
Right.
Because he had an absolute conviction that this guy was a truly special player. However, it does go beyond that because – there are a whole lot of teams out there. You've got to give credit all the way up in the Angels organization. Give credit to the cross-checkers because Jeff Malinoff, Rick Wilson, who's now the scouting director, Mike Silvestri, those guys, when they saw him, they bought in, even if not necessarily they didn't always see everything that you would expect to see.
It's amazing how – so out of the five main decision-makers here were Morehart, the area guy, Silvestri, the East Coast supervisor, Willie and Malinoff, the national guys, Eddie Bain, scouting director. Well, Morehart's no longer an area scout. He's a pro scout now. Silvestri, no longer in scouting. Willie, the scouting director. Eddie Bain, no longer in the organization, famously let go, now scouting with the Tigers. Only Jeff Malinoff, just
still,
2 years later,
is still
in
the same
position.
Role.
That is that's an amazing amount of change. At the same time, there have been a lot of stability in the Angels organization prior to that. They've definitely gone through some rocky shoals the last couple of years.
But so what happens, though, is that, and Morehart says himself, what he says is give credit to him. He says give credit to Eddie because Eddie Bain was the scouting director and he believed in me.
Right.
And that is something that scouts, we run into. It's funny. I think that down the road, I did get a chance to write about this in the story because I mean, 4,000 words was just not enough.
And by the way, he did it in a week. Yeah. You did all the reporting and all the writing in a week, so you're to be commended. All of it over the phone, by the way. None of those interviews were over were in person, were they?
No.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
But
pretty fun to sit on the office next to you and hear those interviews.
But you go back, and Derek Jeter in 92, he is the pick that's kind of talked about, like,
right.
You know, how did he get to that point?
And
you
had Pujols is the other big one. Like,
right. I was going to say, and you had in the case of Jeter, it was
you had a scout for the Astros who was the former player.
But you had a scout for the Astros, and I'm sorry
Hal
that
Newhouser? No, that's not it.
I'm not going to remember his name right now on the podcast.
Buster Olney's written about him a lot.
But he basically said, okay, well, clearly you do not believe in me.
Right.
Because if you believed in me, you would have drafted this guy because this guy is clearly
right.
the best guy. And
right.
he was. Albert Pujols, you have the, you know,
Fernando Arango
story where
the Rays Midwest cross-checker says that he had Albert Pujols number one on his board. They worked them out with Dan Jennings, the scouting director there, but worked out Pujols at catcher because there were so many concerns about his size, and he just had a terrible BP. He did not take to catching very well, and the Rays didn't take him in the first 12 rounds. Obviously.
In the first 12 rounds, and again.
13, I guess. They picked the head of St. Louis, too.
Right. And again, it's something where the scout, rightfully in Arango's case, says, well, clearly then,
right.
you don't believe in me.
That would have been
my opinion, especially, it's one thing when you're saying, in Jeter's case, it was pick six.
Right, and there was money involved there.
Right. When Pujols goes in the 13th round, yeah. and if you have a guy who, whether it's one, two, or three on the board,
right, right.
if you have a cross-checker who has that guy as one of the top three talents in the game,
yeah, in the whole draft,
or
his part of the country,
his part of the country, and turns him in with a number that basically would put him as a top first round pick, and you're not taking him with, basically by the 13th round, you're at what pick?
Jason Pruitt out of Brookhaven College is who they took in the 13th round. Let's just, by the way, how epic, and I mean epic, would the Rays draft have been that year? Hamilton, Carl Crawford, Doug Wechter got to the big leagues. Seth McClung got to the big leagues in the fifth round. Matt Diaz in the 17th round. That was a pretty good draft. I'm sure
you add
Pujols
to it. Which, by the way, a little project I'm working on. So in that, just a random aside, but in our first prospect handbook, the 2001 prospect handbook,
mm-hmm.
the Cardinals' top 30 basically has one player who ended up having a significant big league career.
Yeah,
but Albert Pujols by himself means it was a good top 30.
Yeah, Bud Smith's no-hitter doesn't quite make him significant enough. The rest of his career was pretty bad. And that same draft, they also drafted but did not sign Ryan Rayburn and Mike Fontenot out of high school.
So
that was pretty good draft
right.
by
but,
Tampa.
So those were, again, those were the case where you had scouts who believed in a guy and their organizations did not – necessarily believe in them.
So the area scout can be as convicted as he wants to be, but if the scouting director doesn't believe in his conviction or share his conviction,
right.
he's going to go nowhere with it.
Right. And that's the thing is that what jumps out about this story is that, now, I'll be honest with you, I haven't heard a story. I'm sure there were other scouts out there who liked Trout a lot.
Right.
In reporting this story, and I talked to scouts, you know, we talked to scouts for other organizations
right.
who scouted that area. We went back and, you know, Aaron Fitt went back through his notes from when he was talking to scouts at the time.
Right, right.
And we have not found, maybe that guy's out there, we haven't found another area scout who seemed to have that same absolute conviction that this is the best player he's ever going to see.
There are definitely a lot of teams that, in retrospect, are claiming they were on Trout.
And there were teams who were – now, I'll say this. If the scout's out there, it may be the Yankees.
Yeah. The Yankees picked – where did they pick in that draft?
I think it was three or four spots after the Angels.
They wound up taking Slade Heathcott.
Right, which they didn't have a choice because Trout
right.
was off the board.
Right.
And
now, Giants were –
and we feel pretty confident. We've gotten multiple – people have told me in reporting the story that the Yankees had Trout number two on their board.
Correct.
So that's a conviction, too.
Right, absolutely.
Didn't matter. They were picking
Strasburg
after.
One, Trout two.
And
we understand that the Giants were on Mike Trout. Understand the Athletics were on Mike Trout.
And maybe the Diamondbacks.
That's right. But it's
if you pick before him,
that's
if you pick before him. Now, yeah. And one of the things that came out was.
The Diamondbacks had multiple picks before that spot, too.
Now, one of the things that came out was, is one of the things with Trout was, is that before the draft, again, this comes down to scouting.
Yeah.
There was a $3.5 million number to sign him being floated out there.
Well, it's Jim Callis, actually. I was talking to Jim today. He doesn't remember it as 3.5. He remembers it as a big number, but not that big.
Okay.
But,
I mean, but that's the number I was giving, you know.
But that's, yeah, we heard that pretty consistently when you were reporting
right.
the story.
But whatever, it was a very large number. And some teams, there is some thought that some teams who liked him may have gone too much of a risk.
Right.
You know, high
we
school.
We like you, but we don't like you that
we
much.
We don't like you that much. And that's when also, again, coming back to scouting, that's where Greg Morehart said, draft him, I'll get him for slot.
That's it. And it helped that he had roomed with the dad in the minor leagues.
Didn't hurt.
Kind of had a relationship there. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and JJ. JJ, one other thing, I guess, on Trout that is worth talking about here. What's the future for Mike Trout with the Angels? He went up to the major leagues, struggled, went back to the minors, kind of got straightened out, has been better since he got back.
Significantly. Funny.
Had a two-homer game.
But one of those things you have to remember again, when you talk about 19 slash, I mean, he was a 19-year-old when he first came up, now he's 20. You talk about guys at that level. Mike Trout, his 5 home runs this year, already puts him in the top 10 of all time, Major League history, for the most homers by a player in his 19, and a guy who was 19 as of June 1st on that season.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
He's number 9 right now. Every homer he hits will move
Who's
up.
Who's number 1 on that list?
Tony Conigliaro.
Ah, Tony C, there you go, that makes sense. But yeah, Sheffield I can think of, got to the big league A-Rod. As a teenager. A-Rod, Robin Yount.
Robin Yount, who had 2 seasons. He was an 18 and a 19-year-old.
Right. Well, they were buying him off of golf, I guess, when they put him in the big leagues.
Right. So you have to – it's like we talked about Justin Upton. Justin Upton was awful when he came
good.
Up that year.
That's
Justin
right.
Upton's now one of the better players in the National League. He was awful as a 19-year-old.
Right.
As a 19-year-old, I think
– Relatively speaking.
Right.
He was awful as a big leaguer.
Right. Awful as a big leaguer. I'm saying like when he came up, I think he hit 189 or something like that.
It was bad. He struck out a lot too.
Trout's right now, as of today, I think it was – I can't remember his on-base and slugging, but it was like he's basically like right at a 100 OPS plus, I think, right now as far as – he's almost like league average as far as that. And
that's
it's
crazy.
238 batting average with 5 homers. He's – for a 19/20-year-old, he's now 20. For as a 20-year-old, he's really holding his own pretty well. Even I know the stat – there's a stat out there. It's like I think they're like 18-4 in games he plays in or something like that.
Oh, wow.
But – that's a little bit of a junk stat. I mean,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of
how
luck.
How many of those games were started by Jared Weaver,
right.
and Santana, and Dan
Yeah,
Aaron.
Exactly. But what he's doing as a 19/20-year-old is actually pretty impressive when you consider how difficult it is. You look at like when A-Rod first came up. A-Rod struggled his first, you know, the first time he hit the big league.
His age 19 year in the minor leagues is the best age 19 minor league season. I think that we did our research. What A-Rod did at age 19 in AAA was insane, and then he got called up at 19. I actually saw A-Rod's, his second game in the major leagues? It was in Boston. I just happened to be at Fenway Park for that. So back before I worked at Baseball America, that actually existed. That part of my life exists. But it's crazy how that small level of success as a teenager in that age 19 season, how that stands out historically.
Right.
Then
that puts you in a very rare club already.
But the immediate future for him, we've got the fast Greek Polish guy, Peter Borges, who's having a nice rookie season, a little bit better offensively, I think, than people expected. You've got Torii Hunter, who's bounced back in August, still only slugging around 430 or 440, but having a solid year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's overpaid, but whatever. It's not our money. And then there's Vernon Wells.
And then there's Vernon Wells. And then there's Bobby Abreu, too, do remember also.
I forgot about Bob Abreu. So what are the Angels going to do? What do you see happening there? What do you think could happen? Because there's not another sucker out there to take Vernon Wells' contract, is there? And then Ed Wade, still general manager in Houston, but they're under mandate to get rid of their payroll. And
maybe you could place them on waivers and the White Sox would pick them up.
What do you see happening for 2012? I mean, from a fantasy perspective, even. Well, he's got to play every day in the big leagues.
You would think, because the one of the things you have to do is as a credibility as an organization, the players in your own organization can look around,
right?
And they know, you know, it's obvious sometimes. The interesting thing when I was talking to a couple of guys about Trout, it's like, well, not Greg Morehart, because with Greg Morehart, you could just project. You know,
yeah.
You could just basically say, okay, he's going to wear an Angels cap.
The guy's original report had a 72 OFP. So just for comparison's sake, that's overall feature potential. The first time I ever saw a really huge overall feature potential was on a bureau list in 1999, which was printed out, by the way, like on those giant printers. It was awesome. It took like days for that thing to print out. I had Josh Hamilton with a 71.
Right.
That's for comparison's sake.
That's comparison.
That's a future Hall of Fame OFP.
Right. That's a future Hall of Fame OFP. But talking to others about it, and one of the interesting points made is that as far as Trout and steals, there really is like he can steal 70 if you want him to steal 70 bases.
Right.
The question comes down to, though, do you want him to steal 70 bases?
Right.
Because stealing 70 bases is a lot of wear and tear. Eric Davis, early in his career, was a 20-80 guy.
Right.
But he was a 20-80 guy for 130, 125 games because you were going to have him miss time.
Right.
Trout can do that, or he may steal you 30 with some more power and with more games played while playing excellent defense in center or looks
left
like with
field.
Them, left field probably,
right.
Because they happen to have...
Torrey has befriended him, and he's in right field. Peter Borges covers a lot of ground in center field. It's really an explosive center fielder.
But the other thing is really what it comes down to, that you know, he's explosive center fielder, but also, and he got there first.
He got there first. I think
that
he
means
actually
something.
Is better on defense.
Right, he
than
may
Mike
be,
Trout.
And yeah, and really the grade is on him because Trout is not considered an 80 defensive center fielder.
He doesn't have
Borges.
He's close though. Borges, I think, is an 8. I think Trout's probably a 7.
Right.
He doesn't have Borges' throwing arm.
No.
I mean, that's an issue. That's,
so,
that's the one tool that he has that's not plus.
Right. Although it's interesting, I was talking to Angel though. They said with throwing arm for an outfielder for us, is it exceptional or is it?
It's 20.
Or
is it 50.
Is it Johnny Damon rolling the ball into the infield?
Right.
And if it's not,
we're going to start making that reference into Ben Revere. We're throwing the ball into the infield. Now that Damon's pretty much
at
the
end. It's actually a Carlos Quentin reference that we're using,
but we've adjusted it. Or Jed Lowry runs out into short
only,
right field and you underhand it.
Listeners, we enjoy the podcast because only on a, you know, we appreciate the fact that as listeners that we can just do that tangent there.
That's
and
right.
There are listeners who's going, they're talking about when Carlos Quentin needed TJ and how he had one throw in his arm for every game, and
that
otherwise
awesome.
He would flip the ball to his teammate.
The legend of Sam Fold or Jed Lowry to run out as close as they could. Oh, the ball's hit to Carlos. I better hustle. This isn't the one time we wanted to make that one throw. But, yeah, it seems like that's the thing the Angels are going to have to figure out next year is what do you do with Vernon Wells? And it seems like the answer would be cut him and just eat it. But they've already – we aren't even talking about the $10 million they're wasting on Gary Matthews Jr. So it's kind of amazing
and,
that they have
well,
basically
is,
five
is Bobby
outfielders.
Abreu maybe? I mean, is that like – is maybe Vernon Wells next year becomes your gape, you know, your black – well, hey, there's another problem. You could say, okay, maybe he becomes your DH next year. But the problem with that is that if Kendry Morales is back
– right.
You have Kendry Morales and Mark Trumbo.
I don't think DH is an issue – is an option because I think Abreu's DH'd most of the time this year and is still a productive player. He doesn't hit for as much power anymore, but he still draws walks. He's an efficient base dealer, and he helps to be that patient in the middle of all their other hacktastic guys. Trumbo, you know, certainly is still hovering with a 300 OBP, but he's still a productive player.
Right, he's a bottom of the order hitter ideally, but he's your number six. You know, your number six hitter who hits 30 home runs.
That's right. That's a productive. He's productive,
especially
he's solid.
Especially
while he's cheap.
But especially while he's cheap, and especially in an era now offensively where
you're not
a 300 OBP is still below average, but it's not 60 points off of the league average or anything like that.
He's 30 points off the league average there, and he's well above average slugging, and it leads your team in home runs.
And if Morales is back and healthy, Morales is...
He's probably going to have to DH after 2 years with a broken leg. So, yeah, I think that their options with Vernon Wells are really limited. Hey, Vernon, can you play third base? You know, I mean... I don't think they really have a whole lot
ask
of
ask Dusty Baker. He might
That's pretty funny. JJ, wrapping up the podcast, let's look ahead to 2012. Gotta imagine Matt Moore will be back in the minor leagues.
if he is, he's my slam dunk choice.
If he is, he's probably going to – it's going to be hard for him to win if he's too old this year. I don't think we expect Bryce Harper to be in the minor leagues all year next year.
I'll say this, though. He has a chance – he could do one of those where we go, okay, did he have enough of a season?
Right. For me, he's the first name that I think of for possible minor league player of the year next year. You pick a guy, then I'll pick a guy. We'll just keep going to throw out some names of who we think could be on that follow list to start next year.
So
I would say Harper is the first obvious guy to throw out.
Harper's a pretty clear, obvious one. I'll throw out See, here's the tough thing. I'll throw out. I'm going to do two guys.
You can go as crazy as you want.
I'm
going to
go crazy. I'm going to do two UCLA pitchers, and I don't know if either of them is going to be in. But I could see Gerrit Cole or Trevor Bauer.
Yeah.
If Trevor Bauer isn't, because the thing about Trevor Bauer, everyone keeps talking about him being in the big league. That's a pretty. There aren't that many holes in that rotation.
Not right now.
Where the Diamondbacks, he'll probably be up next year. I'm expecting he will be.
Was it Ian Kennedy, Joe Saunders, Daniel Hudson, and I'm forgetting a veteran.
There's a.
Our internet's down today, by the way. This is why we were asking.
We're just doing it off the cuff.
And not answering them.
But I expect he will be up, and I expect Cole. So I'm actually not going to throw either of those. I'm mentioning those guys, but I'm backtracking because I don't think either of those is going to be in, you know, is going to actually be in that race next year. But so I'm going to go Jerks and Profar.
I think Jerks and Profar is a great suggestion.
Because to me, I think actually Jerks and Profar, I think Jerks and Profar right now, I know that we did not in the midseason update, but the more I hear about Profar, it's nothing against Manny Machado, but I think Profar is a better prospect than Manny Machado.
He very well may be. I think Jerks and Profar is a great pick. Now, where's their high class A team? It's in Myrtle Beach, correct?
Myrtle Beach. So it's going to depress his numbers somewhat.
It could depress his numbers, but if he puts up power numbers in that ballpark. Now, that ballpark is not what it used to be. They have brought the fences in. But, I mean, like, one of the reasons that everyone liked Andy Marte so much as a prospect was that I think he was the first guy to slug 500
at Myrtle Beach.
Nobody slugged 500 in that ballpark. Frenchie did, though, Jeff Francoeur. It was like a half a season. But power numbers were very few and far between when that ballpark first opened. It's a little bit better now. And then Cody Johnson had a big year there, that's what Cody Johnson does. He hits home runs and strikes out. But, I would actually go with Manny Machado. That would be my next pick. Because the one thing the caveat I have on Manny Machado is the Orioles might panic and bring him up, in which case his progress would stall. Because that's what happens to all Orioles guys. They get to the big leagues and they start to blow.
And especially the one thing, I'm doing the Carolina League top 20. Manny Machado is going to rank very high in that one. You can feel safe to say on that. But I've gotten multiple comments. Physically, he's not what he's going to be yet.
Yeah. Bryce
Harper physically is what Bryce Harper is going to be.
Right.
Because he's a mountain right now.
Right.
Manny Machado.
He's got his man strength already.
Manny Machado is a puppy who still has years where he's going to add. He's going to fill out. Like everyone keeps talking about his big feet, how big his feet are and how much his frame, he has the frame to be a massive player down the road. He's not there yet.
Right.
I think
having a big minor league season, which is just consolidating his time. And if the Orioles can be patient, I can see him being at Frederick/Bowie or just at Bowie for the whole year. And that's a tough hitting environment. But again, his power potential, I think, is pretty significant. So that's back to you.
I'm going to throw out and this one, I see a lot of reasons not to say that, but I'm going to throw Tyler Skaggs out there. And the reason I just say that is that
– you are going off board.
I mean, I'm going off board there, I know. But the reason I say that is in Skaggs' case, he's going to likely be in the minors all next year. And he's pretty polished to be in the minors, I barring injuries, because I do think Bauer is going to be the first guy up.
I
and I think that Jared Parker may be the second guy up if the D-backs need someone.
That's where I was headed.
So,
and they even have a David Holmberg who has some polish.
Pat Corbin.
That's right. They have other
options. They have other options, although Holmberg I think would be – Holmberg because he's a step below those guys right now. So
he just is a polished.
But in Skaggs' case, so I think there's a pretty good chance that he's going to spend – all next year. Now, the problem he's going to have is if he did win it, it'd be Jeff Francis winning it when we had Jeff Francis winning it.
Right.
It's a guy whose numbers, it's a 3 ERA, and you go, you know what? 3 ERA in the PCL, that's really good.
Right,
it'd be something like that. I wouldn't want to take 10-1 odds on that, but he's just a guy who strikes me as really good pitching prospect, who's going to probably be there all next year, who's far enough up. I mean, we could throw out, you know, guys who had great year. It very rarely does a Midwest League guy or a South Atlantic League guy win it.
Very hard to do. I'm trying to think. Other than Andrew Jones, has anyone done it out of the South Atlantic League? I think that Bryce Harper could have done it this year. I think Jerks and Profar, he was. If you're talking about five finalists, he probably was our number five.
He had a great
guy.
It was a
tremendous season.
Okay.
One of the
back
most
here, we're
going to
do this one more time before we.
Yeah, I was actually just trying to think if there was a pitcher I would pick. Just to think about pitchers who could be that minor league player of the year. And I couldn't really think of one. The one who I did think of, and I will throw out, because I don't think he'll be in the Midwest League because he was already there this year, would be Carlos Martinez of the Cardinals. And that's just a guy where he's just electric enough. And, again, Nick Castellanos on Sunday night's Baseball America show on XM Radio, Sirius XM, XM 89, Sirius 209, 7 o'clock Eastern time. But Carlos Martinez was pointed out by Nick Castellanos. He's like, I don't know that guy's name, but he's a guy on the Cardinals, and he was filthy. And that is the kind of guy who – I was actually going to throw out a different Latin player. I was going to throw out Miguel Sano. I'll throw out two Latin guys. But the reason I picked Martinez is he's going to be in the Florida State League / Texas League. And he's the kind of guy who, like, Matt Moore almost won it because of the strikeouts. Carlos Martinez has the electric kind of arm that he could strike out his way to that award. Miguel Sano, I would say, isn't going to be in that mix as well when you hit 20 home runs in the Appy League. But it's hard to hit home runs in the Midwest League.
Right. He may hit, if he has 20 next year in a full season, he still had a great year.
That's right. And he could – wouldn't shock me if he hit 30 next year.
No.
Nothing that guy would do – it wouldn't shock me if he made 70 errors next year. It wouldn't shock me if he wound up at first base next year. He's just a big, big guy. But, wow,
no,
his BP was special.
The guy who I don't think – again, I keep throwing out guys who I'm interested in but I don't think will be candidate. Dylan Bundy – very polished high school pitcher. The problem he's going to have is that traditionally with the high school pitchers, you put them on such short pitch counts, such short leashes that I don't think he can put up the counting numbers to do it because
– I actually thought about throwing Jameson Taillon out because this year was his trial run, 80 to 100 innings, that kind of thing. And then maybe next year the Pirates would step him up, be in the Florida State League, warm weather as opposed to West Virginia power, all that kind of stuff, where maybe he would have a big year.
Could have a big year, but I just don't think – I think, especially comparing him to Carlos Martinez, I think Martinez is going to have a bigger year.
I think Martinez will have a bigger year. I think he's got a little bit more electricity.
The thing that Martinez and Shelby Miller for them, either of those might be up at some point. I will throw out the one – this is my dark horse is Oscar Tavares, speaking of Cardinals.
Last year, your dark horse was Billy Hamilton.
Right, who did steal 100 bases.
He did. If he'd gotten off to a better start, he would have put himself in this conversation. Who knows how much the cold weather affected him. I mean, the kid's from Mississippi making his first full season. It's not easy. It's not easy to go up to Dayton, play in the cold in the depressed Midwest League offensive environment.
But Tavares is really his best tool. Get beyond the hit tool, and the rest of them are solid, but nothing spectacular.
Right.
But it's a pretty spectacular hit tool. And the reason I say that is it's crazy to ever say a guy could hit 400.
That's crazy.
He did hit 380 this year in the Midwest League.
Right.
Now,
I guess the Midwest League, I'm just thinking about what I just said. I guess it's not quite as offensively down as it was like in the years of Justin Upton and Cameron Maben being there.
Still,
Matt Eddy says
you
it's
say that,
much more offensive
it,
now.
It
than
is more offensive,
time.
But at the same time, Tavares hit 380. I think the next guy on the leaderboard hit 330.
And you said he could go 0 for 29?
He won the title because I haven't checked it, but I'm pretty sure he, with like 4 days to go, if you added the 0 for 29, which he had to add to qualify, he still won the league by 25 points.
That's amazing. That's really amazing.
So I just think like if Tavares next year, which is going to be difficult, Florida State League, not exactly an easy place to hit either, but he could get it. Maybe the Texas League at some point. But if he went out there and flirted with 400, I think he's a good enough prospect that we would consider him.
I do wonder what it would take, what kind of season someone would have to put up in the Cal League, considering that we did not give the award to Brandon Wood the year he had 100 extra base hits.
And we look wise in hindsight for not. It's it sounds bad, but
he did
Brandon
Belt,
look at your
stop.
Brandon Belt. You know, Brandon Belt's, most of his numbers last year were doing it.
Right.
And we did not. We considered him. But the reality of it is the California League is so offensive.
You'd have to play, like, in San Jose, which is maybe the most normal park, and just go insane and maybe be a catcher.
No. Let me ask you this. You're playing in Lancaster or High Desert? 400, 550, 600, 700?
I still don't think we'd give it to you. I don't think we would ever give it to somebody playing in those ballparks. I don't think you can assess players there. The only guys you can sort of assess there are pitchers. And my all-time favorite High Desert story was the kid Chris Sines, who was not in our Brewers top 30, and then he got to the big leagues for a one-game start. He threw six, I think, scoreless innings against the Cardinals, like in 2004, a year they were really right. good. And I was like, "What? Who is this guy?" So I tracked him down when he got sent back to AAA, did a story on him, and found out that the year before, he'd been in High Desert, and he had like a 7 ERA. Well, he had like a 10 ERA in home starts and like a 4 ERA on the road, and it was impossible to assess. And then the thing is, he had Tommy John surgery either later that year or the next year and never got back to the big leagues. You look him up on Baseball Reference, S-A-E-N-Z, Chris Sainz. And it's one of the most unique careers. You know, 100 years from now, he's Moonlight Graham.
But the best way to put it is, I mean, Daniel Bard took like two years to recover from the fact that he had to pitch in the Cal League.
That's right.
He went to Lancaster, and he was done for a long time.
A lot of people wrote him off.
You did not.
I'm very happy that I did not. Take that one, Callis. That's it for the podcast. A great way to end it by me taking a shot at Jim. Obviously, we kid. So for J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.